Thank you so much. I'm actually presenting today with Kristen Leffel, who is part of the 30 Million Words team. And because we didn't know that Jill was going to be so efficient, we actually slashed our talk last night. So we'll try to extend our words. Use a little child-directed speech. So first slide, please. So again, thank you so much for having us here. We're going to share a little bit about our program and our approach and our philosophy. In our brief 15 minutes, which can now be 30, we're going to give you a minute background on the early language gap, and really it's, you know, speaking to the choir here, so we will go over that quickly. We'll then tell you a little bit about our program and really its mission, its philosophical underpinnings. We'll go over some of our early results from our randomized control pilot, and lastly we'll go over our next steps in scaling up. We are all familiar with the staggering achievement gap facing children from low-income backgrounds in this country. Suffice it to say that by the time children enter kindergarten, less than half of those from low-income backgrounds will even be ready to learn. It's no surprise then that 80% or more of African American and Latino children can even read or do math at grade level in the 4th, 8th, or 12th grade. If you're a Caucasian, it's 50%. No matter any way you look at it, the statistics aren't good. And they really point to the fact that we need to look earlier. And again, I'm speaking to the choir, and more aggressively. I put up this slide that everybody is familiar with, really to remind us where it all starts. A child's development is really, the proxy is a language, their language development, and Hart and Risley beautifully demonstrated it by showing that children by the age of 3 will know less than half the number of words when they're from low-income backgrounds as compared to their more affluent peers. And what is the cause? I feel like, again, I'm speaking to the choir. It goes back to that Hart and Risley, that seminal research that demonstrated that by the end of the age of three, they will have heard 30 million words less than their more affluent peers. And this 30 million word gap really profoundly impacts not just a child's vocabulary, his test score, his IQ, really his whole life course trajectory. But again, quantity is only one part of the equation. We know that quality and the qualitative input are significant impactors. And science has shown us that children from low-income backgrounds will be exposed to significantly less talk and gesture, shorter and less complex phrases, less use of open-ended questions, and greater use of directives, and really lower levels of joint attention and maternal responsiveness. The early language environment is a complex interplay and interaction between parent and child. But it culminates in a significant impact on how children do and how ready they are to learn. With children from low-income backgrounds have significantly less vocabulary development, grammar, narrative skills, early literacy skills, all those things that are so key for doing well in school. And these disparity in early language skills are seen from infancy through high school, with the gap only widening with age. So there's no doubt that this early language environment has a pervasive impact on children. But at the heart of this early language environment lies a very tangible and ultimately modifiable variable that we're all interested in, that of parent talk. And in fact, we take great heart in this because parents have the power to profoundly impact their children's development and ultimate trajectory through their words. Parents are part of the solution here for all of us and for all of you. So we asked in our program, can the disparity in child outcomes be addressed or partially addressed through a parent-directed intervention that targets both the qualitative and quantitative aspects of parent talk? And that's how we came up with the idea for the 30 Million Words Project. This is a parent-directed intervention designed to enrich the early language environments of children living in poverty. And this was really our focus, is this target demographic. Not that we don't care about high SES children, but we talk enough. So, but we know to try to start closing this achievement gap, we have to think beyond the one-on-one intervention. This is an incredibly important thing, but we have to set our sights higher on changing at a population level. And we put up this slide really just to show our thought process and the way we're going, starting off small and building up. And so in our program, what we're doing is working systematically and iteratively to develop a scalable program, not a one-on-one program, but a population level program that can impact parental beliefs and language behavior at a larger level. And we want this to come from within the population. Talk is something that every parent has within them. And for that reason, this program, it's interesting. I was listening to the two previous speakers who are amazing. And, you know, really children, it's the first person, you know, it's talking about the child's perspective. In our program, our ultimate interest is changing child outcomes. But interestingly, our real focus is the parents. We're enamored, we strongly believe in them. And so our program's development has not just centered around the parents, but they are an integral part of developing our program. And that's why we say that we are parent-directed, we're parent-developed, we're parent-tested, and hopefully very soon we're parent-implemented. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Kristen.
So the 30 million words intervention unites two really essential elements, both education and feedback. So evidence points that child-directed speech is mediated by parents' knowledge of child development. So we know that that's key, but it's not enough. So we know that feedback is really critical for sustained behavior change. So if we're going to reach that population level impact, we know we have to work systematically from the bottom up. So we started out by testing the quantitative linguistic feedback. So really what that is the biofeedback part of our intervention, so the LENA. And so the LENA gives parents a feel for how much they're talking with their children. So we started out by developing a small intervention and testing it in a proof of concept feasibility trial, which we've actually recently published. And we tested it with 17 non-parental caregivers of young children. And we found that during the intervention, we had over a 30% increase in adult word count and almost a 25% increase in conversational turns. So with those results, we incorporated that into our larger intervention. So before we get into the randomized control trial that we tested that in, I'll tell you more just about the 30 million words intervention itself. So our curriculum is theoretically driven. It's a multimedia program that translates cross-disciplinary science into easy to understand and easy to apply concepts. So it's standardized, computer-based, so that way we can scale it up in a lot of different formats. So the education component combines animation and real parent video with social marketing and behavior change techniques. So first I'll show you some animation. So just think about how would you show a parent something really nebulous, like, you know, your talk builds your baby's brain. So this is how we show it.
When you say a word, it enters through your child's ear. The brain hears it and grows a connection for that word. Book. Ball. Moon.
So it's not quite as cool as Dr. Kuhl's
not quite as
technology,
high-tech.
But we're pretending.
So we use that to show otherwise kind of hard-to-picture concepts to make it really concrete for parents. So we do that, and then we also use real parent and child video to show parents how to apply it to their everyday routines. So we'll show you actually video of a real TMW graduate with her daughter explaining to us how to do it in your everyday routines.
It's as simple as you have a watermelon. What shape is the watermelon? That's one thing to talk about. You slice the watermelon. What color is it? It's red. It also has what? Black seeds. Then you talk about how many seeds there are. Never going to go into eating it. How does it feel? It's juicy. There's a lot of water. So we just turned this into a whole learning experience.
So we've worked hard with our team of animators and video producers to develop a lot of that and integrate it into our curriculum. And so building on top of that, we also have iterated our quantitative linguistic feedback to incorporate more goal setting, behavior change strategies, and get more quantitative and qualitative goal setting in that and really tailor those goals to individual family needs and routines. So then we tested this curriculum that we've been developing into one-on-one home visiting intervention, and that was an 8-week intervention. And so 26 families on the south side of Chicago completed that. So the treatment group received the 30 million words intervention during 8 weekly 1-hour home visits, and then the control group received a nutrition intervention, and they didn't get any feedback. And then all participants completed 14 leaner recordings and then had pre, post intervention and follow-up measures to evaluate this. So to give you a feel of how this played out over the 6 months, everyone completed 3 baseline recordings before they knew really what was going on. We did get consent though. And then pretests, we did pretest assessments, then there were the 8 weeks of intervention with weekly LENA recordings after, then an immediate post-test measurement, and then we had 4 monthly post-intervention recordings with no follow-up quantitative linguistic feedback, and then a 4-month follow-up measurement after that. So the outcome measures that we assessed were parents' knowledge of child language development, and for that we developed and standardized our own questionnaire, and then also language behavior, so the LENA recordings, and then also video coding of parent and child natural play. So this chart is very busy, but we'll walk you through it. So the control group children were slightly younger. The mean age was around 24 months, and the treatment group children were around 28 months. There were more male children in both groups than female, and you can see that all our participants were low SES. I also want to point out that most of our attrition happened after consent but before the intervention actually started, so we only had 1 treatment group participant drop out after the intervention began, and only 2 control group participants dropped out after the intervention began. So once they got in it, they mostly stuck in it. So I'll pass it back now to Dana to talk through the results.
Okay. So as Kristen mentioned, today we're going to just present two major outcome measures, the changes in parent language, understanding of child language development, and behavior. Behavior is measured by LENA change, as well as the standard video coding measures. Interestingly, we all know that child language development and parent knowledge is so important, but believe it or not, there's no validated questionnaire out there. So we worked long and hard to develop this questionnaire, which has yet to be validated. Anybody who wants to help us do it, we'd love to work with you. We actually reviewed it with 362 parents across Chicago, of all SESs, but what we found in our TMW group was that you can see the blue is the experimental, the red is control, and this is the immediate post-test and then 4 months post-intervention. And you can see for knowledge that we did increase knowledge significantly, and it's sustained over 4 months, so that was a positive. Now the LENA results, again a pretty busy slide, but I'd like to just direct your attention to the experimental group and the control group. This first column is their pretest baseline measures, the three averages together. This is during intervention, which is what most people are discussing today. And then follow-up, this is without any type of feedback. Do you sustain this behavior change? And we'll present it in percent change from baseline, but then also tell you the logistic regression results. So you can see that the measures were actually balanced. So during intervention, what happened? For adult word count, we increased approximately 30%. For conversational turn count, we increased approximately 50% as compared to baseline in these parents. And child vocalization increased as well. The control group didn't really change much at all. And when we did logistic regression, addressing slight difference in age, et cetera, we were significant during intervention. Now what happens post-intervention, up to 4 months post-intervention? Percent change, you can see adult word count increases approximately 19% above baseline. Conversational turn count is approximately 30%+ over baseline. Child vocalization is above base, significantly above baseline as well. Control group really pretty much stays the same. Logistic regression didn't, it trended towards but did not meet significance, and this is likely, this is a pretty small group with only four post-intervention measures. But you can see from the percent change, it does look like we're moving the needle over. But let's look at it in a different way. Let's look at each LENA recording separately and the average between parents. And, what you can see, this axis is basically each individual recording. The first three recordings are the baselines. Between the two lines are the during intervention. And then the last four are post-intervention. And this is conversational turns per hour. The dark blue is thankfully experimental. The light blue is control. So let's just focus our attention on the experimentals. They were balanced at baseline. And you can see a significant and a robust increase in conversational turn count in our experimental group. What I found really interesting was, except for it looked a little bit wonky here, it's pretty darn stable, that conversational turn count in the control group. But you can see a significant increase during the intervention. Now what happens when this line occurs, when you stop giving feedback? Well, there's a definite drop-off in the conversational turn count, but it still remains about 30% above baseline. I always say, if we went to Weight Watchers, nobody would actually think about taking away somebody's scale. We need to find ways that parents can continue to have, an understanding of what they're providing in their children's environment. So next is the adult word count. Adult word count is not quite as pretty a picture. And I think this really relates to the fact that, LENA is sensitive to, all the adults in a child's environment. So you change, the number in the environment, it's going to change how everything looks. But so as a result, the control group looks a little bit messier. Let's just focus our attention on the experimental group again. The first three are baseline, and you can see in our during intervention, there is a definite robust increase. What's interesting, and we found this clinically as well, because we're translational researchers, is that it took probably about three episodes of linguistic feedback for parents to really get a feel for how much they were talking. Kristen, she'd come back, and Kristen was one of our fabulous interventionists as well as research assistants. Really, we saw that they got a feel for how much they were talking, and I thought that was quite interesting, and you can see that in our graph. But what happens afterwards, there's no doubt that their adult word count, in contrast to conversational turn count, drops right down. Now the last chart that I'd like to show is child vocalization count, which I think is quite interesting. Again, we're so parent focused that sometimes I don't look quite in detail at the children. But what you can see is at baseline fairly similar. Once again, similar to the adults, you can see a robust increase in child vocalization. I'm not sure what happened in these two recordings. But then after that, the child vocalization count continues to stay up in contrast to the control group. And, I'd like to mention, when I was talking to this about this with Terry Paul, he made a really astute observation that we have to really look back at. Because we're so parent-focused, I sometimes forget that the kids are a really important part of this conversation as well. Sorry. Terry said, what about the fact that maybe that you're not only empowering the parents, but maybe you're empowering the kids too. You're empowering them to expect more out of their language environment. And they're really helping push this conversation along. So maybe adults don't, use quite as much adult words, but they are responding to their kid. And, in my book, that's a major win. So that's the end of the LENA results. Let's go to the video coding results. And we felt, I'm at the University of Chicago with Susan Goldenmeadow and Susan Levine, and, we need to have both. We need to have both to demonstrate what we're showing. So we did the natural play within the lab. And we were quite pleased to see that what we were seeing in Lena, we also saw in the video coding. And in fact, actually, our video coding data is even a little bit better than our Lena data, because let's face it, how many of us spend 16 hours just bathing our children in language? I'm really not a good mother, so, but she will be as a result. So what we can see here is, you know, the first measure, and this is the significance is via logistic regression, where we can see the blue are the experimental, the red are control, and you can see immediately post and 4 months post intervention, their parents are using a significant greater number of utterances. In terms of word types, you can see, again, significantly increased number of word types. Tokens, excuse me. What about word types? You can see here we do, at the immediate post, increase the word types by parents. We lose significance at 4 months, but again, this is a really small sample size. So, and then child word types at immediate post, we are significant. And that's sort of a measure of diversity. We lose significance at 4 months, but you can see that it looks nice. So, you know, what are the limitations? This is a first step. As I mentioned, you know, we have this long-term goal. The only way to truly even have a chance at reaching this long-term goal is to be systematic, iterative, rigorous, and, you know, to be able to say, look, this is what we need to change. Nobody has the answer from the very beginning. And so, you know, this is a small sample size. You know, it limits our understanding of the nuances of uptake. As Terry mentioned, you know, are we going to impact and be able to impact every single parent? No, because there are so many, the issues are multifactorial, but I do believe that we can impact a number of these parents. So we need to have a larger sample size for sure. The post-intervention drop-off, you know, suggests the need for further sustainability. I mean, I feel pretty good that if we had a larger sample size, we would have met significance. But what is significance? We want real outcomes. And I feel like we need to consider ways to allow parents to have greater insight. You know, our short post-intervention follow-up really limit our exploration of child impact, which is the most important. I come from the world of deaf and hard of hearing, and nobody would ever expect one of my patients that I implanted to start talking 4 months post-implant, and so in the same way, we need long-term follow-up, which is really our next steps. What did we learn from this study? And each study that we do, we are critical and we look to see how we can improve our approach. Increased by a third our module size to increase the dosage, and we really responded to parents, because parents were saying to us, you know, this is great, now I can understand that, you know, my language can impact my baby, but how can my language impact my baby's behavior? And we all know that there's a huge amount of literature out there looking at executive function and self-regulation, and, you know, Kristen and I and our whole team views ourselves as we're the translators. So we take all these really smart people's research and try to translate it. And so our new modules include executive function. We're going to have group sessions. There's power to social capital, and since I know I have extra time, I'm just sort of going on, but we recently invited back our TMW graduates for a group session to really discuss the next steps. And what was very exciting is these parents did not feel or view themselves as subjects. They view themselves as collaborators. And these collaborators, they had a lot of ideas and suggestions. I was going to have them write the next IRB, actually. So it was very exciting, because there is social capital to be harnessed. Post-intervention booster sessions, I've mentioned it before, you know, a chicken in every pot, a Lena in every pocket, I guess. parents as interventionists, we feel strongly that this needs to come from within the community. From our TMW graduates, you know, there is such strength, and we're going to harness it and make them all drink the Kool-Aid with us. And, you know, going back to our our stepwise iteration. Next is our community-based rollout. We're working and collaborating, because science is not an island. We're collaborating with our, at the University of Chicago, the Urban Education Institute, and their charter school systems, and because we want longitudinal data. And we're going to work with some of their feeder institutions. So there's the Center for New Horizons, which is a daycare center, sort of an education center. It's not quite Ounce of Prevention, but it's similar, working with the same population and implementing TMW and adapted TMW at one-on-one group sessions, working with providers, because we all know, as Jill's talks demonstrated, that, you know, most of these kids, they're not with their parents, you know, 16 hours a day. So we need to impact their whole environment. So that's our next step. And the great thing about having, you know, the charter school system and UEI is they collect all that data till third grade, and that's a hard part. So going back to our chart, you know, we are working systematically to hopefully in a year or two we'll come back and say, okay, we're at this, all right, maybe not a year or two, 5 years. We're at this population level impact. This is where we are. This is what we're doing. And I think it's really important to note that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to develop an evidence-based intervention. None of us are alone, and this is a small number of the incredible individuals who are part of this, the development of this program. It takes a village and it takes funding, and we want to thank our collaborators, the Hemera Foundation, who has really made allowed us to go to this the next step, the NIH and Department of Education, which is not up there. And that's it. Thank you. Oh, yes, Kim. I hope it's not too complex.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little more about what the experience of the control group was.
They were balanced in terms of their demographic. They received a nutrition intervention that we developed. And what's interesting, I mean, it's a pretty light intervention, you know, don't eat junk food, that type of thing. But one of the parents, tell them
what. We had a couple moms actually change what they fed their kids based on the little sheets they got. And some of them got really excited about the project, even though they didn't really know what TMW was. But we were controlling for just the attentional aspect of having people come to your house every week and that sort of thing. But they didn't get any kind of feedback or anything like that. So, yeah.
The other thing I wanted to comment on is that these are not just statistically significant kind of, the effect sizes are pretty substantial. I mean, it's sort of maybe 30-40% increase in conversational turns of child voices.
Yeah, my statistician said, Dana, I can't believe you got any significance from your sample size. So I think that's the power of the LENA. Really, you get a lot of data, so I guess that helps with power. Yeah.
Given that it looks like a pretty significant effect, and I'm not talking about the statistical significance, the size of the effect, the question that comes immediately to my mind is the cost of it. I mean, I suspect you're already projecting what the long-term costs might be for an intervention that can be implemented largely on the basis of tools that you create that can be presented online. What do you think about?
I think you're an economist, because that's all the economists ever ask me. How much does it cost per patient? I'm like, what about changing? I must admit, once the intervention and once these tools are developed, yes, they're free. I mean, I can't answer that question, and I won't, you know, I won't try. I mean, our hope is that we can scale up so that there are different levels of intervention. I mean, you can't change a population by just one-on-one for 32 million individuals. You can't do it just with a public awareness campaign. I sort of view it as sort of a multimodal impact. You know, this is something that needs to be looked into. But the great thing is that I always say talk is free. We just need to find a way to get parents to realize, you know, that huge impact they make. So, yes.
That's a really interesting result. I'm just wondering, especially since you focus really on getting feedback from the parents, I'm always curious with these kinds of interventions, whether you get a response from some parents saying, look, it's really helpful for you to tell me to talk more to my child, but, you know, really at the end of the day, what I need
You are so right. Well, we always say there aren't any silver bullets, and Maslow was right, right? Unless these people, unless individuals have the energy, have the food, this needs to be part of a larger impact for, you know, I mean, look, you know, we've never had such inequity in this country as we do now. You know, there's a problem. But we're focusing on language. Just,
well, yeah. Are parents really responding? It sounds like the parents, despite those kinds of questions, are really responding that they're finding this useful.
We talk a lot about incorporating it into routines and things you have to get done anyway, so it's not sit and play with your baby all day long, but get them incorporated or involved in what you're doing. And so I think parents respond to that pretty well. And I think because a lot of these parents don't feel like they have control over a lot of things in their lives, they feel like this is something they can really impact with their child. And so we found that a lot of parents really feel a lot of agency with that.
And it's important to remember, I mean, we're not saying, look, every single, I mean, this impacted every single parent. This is not unfortunately not the medical model. Behavior is a tough thing to impact. So I think, you know, time will tell, you know, I'm sure there'll be a subset. We looked at working memory because I'm really interested in that as a predictor for intervention uptake. All the issues you see these families went through. I mean, we had gunshots, we had incarceration, we had a lot of stuff going on in these families, and it's tough because you realize that this is, you know, only one tiny bit of what they're going through.
So I've gone over our time.
Yeah, sorry, we've gone over our time. Yes, Jill.
So you have some videos that I've seen interviewing parents talking about very large disorders.
Yeah. Because of you all, we work really, really hard to get a basic website up so we could have the video, right?
Yeah, so tmw.org, you can find, well, more about our project in general, but there is a video with interviews from our parents and that sort of thing, talking about their experience. Hopefully it's up today.
But we know how technology is. Yes. Oh.
You listed when you put up the table of control and your treatment subjects, you listed parent stress as one of the entries in there. Can you say a little bit about how you assess that and if that might have impacted?
There's a parent stress index. So my statistician, this is what happens when you have a surgeon doing social science. she said, Dana, you've got more measures than you do have than you have participants. We wanted to make sure that, you know, depression was another thing that we looked at, parent stress. There actually, you know, are two things. We were, the families at entry were balanced, and it didn't look like we changed their stress. I mean, you could say, some people could say, look, you know, you're adding to these people's stress. Well, we didn't add to their stress. We didn't decrease it, but we didn't change it. Yes, Steve.
So, do you have data on the extent to which the parents were engaged in interactive reading with the kids?
We have a lot of data. We do have, you know, change in book reading, although I don't think we've looked at it. We haven't assessed that. And we actually have in the video, we had them change video while they were book reading, you know, pre and post and post. And we haven't analyzed. We've got a lot of data.
Well, let me just throw out the idea. I think your presentation raises so many of the issues that we all have when we're trying to change complex behaviors. But, you know, if you want to blow the top off the lead, engage in an hour, 45 minutes of interactive book reading with their kid day for, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, and you can get all the big people way up there. So parents will establish that as a habit, as a routine. I mean, that'll just knock up the vocabulary exposure. It's got to be interactive. It can't be just reading.
Yeah.
And so if you see that across any SES, so high, low, whatever, if they get that habit established, it stays. It really is one of those things that can just change that entire environment.
No, we completely agree. And actually, we have one or two modules. One is on dialogic book reading. The other is on oral narratives. And you can actually see, we haven't looked at it scientifically, but you can tell when they're actually book reading because you'll say, wow, look at how high those LENA results. And you'll listen and they'll be like reading, you know, Good Night Moon. Or, so we're big believers in book reading, obviously. But for us, you know, a population level movement can't be, you know, it's all, I mean, yes, book reading is a key part, but it's the agency, the power that comes from parent word. And so it's, you know, it's more global. For, but yeah, totally. Yes.
Did you develop your own video coding system?
We use the one.
We use it from Susan Goldenmeadow and Susan Levine's lab. So we trained a coder in their scheme.
Thank you. Oh, yes.
You talked about the post-treatment drop-off, both the conversation with fermentation and the adult work.
Yes.
It looked like on the pre-graph where you presented the Lena results, that also there was a drop-off overall from recording 11 to recording 15 for the control group, which is very depressing. Could you maybe say why that might be? I mean, why would you get worse in the control group?
Yeah, well, we made sure that they were always on, because it's true. I mean, you know, that's an important thing. I can't hypothesize at this point as to that reason, because they were really stable throughout, but we were going every week to them and, you know, talking to them about nutrition, so I don't know. Life is complex. It's busy. So, all right. Thank you so much.